Maybe I was right. We're not normal people. We are monsters. But if we're monsters, we'll thrive in the dark together.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that reviews and rates Book Talk's most popular and talked about books and tells you whether or not you should fit them into your busy schedules. And for the month of October, we are reviewing spooky season books. So yeah, I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And we have a good one for our spooky season finale, guys. It's a rom-com about serial killers. And it's exactly what you're picturing. Mm-hmm. So this is the story of Butcher and Blackbird, which is the story of Sloane and Rowan. They're both serial killers, and they both target other serial killers. So they're basically like cleaning up bad guys by killing bad guys. And they cross paths while they're on the hunt, and a rom-com affair ensues, and their nicknames for each other are Butcher and Blackbird. So it's honestly like the banter in this book, top tier, funny, also disgusting. The opening scene involves maggots, and the trigger warning or the dedication of the book says, "This is for those of you who saw the trigger warning that said cannibalism and thought, like, I'm in."
So we're in.
Gotta have at least one cannibalism book in our spooky season.
The warning for book two involves auto cannibalism.
Eating yourself.
Ew.
Oh, God.
That's worse.
I don't know that I'd say worse.
No, it's worse.
But, like, at least there's consent when you eat yourself. Well, I guess you could be forced to do it. But both bad.
I'll let you guys just dream on that one while we discuss.
Oh, God.
I'm already nauseous.
Anyway, this would be a good time to say trigger warning. If you do not like gory things, reading about gory things, discussing gory things, this is your time to bow out, because they are serial killers and they are creative.
Yes. All right. You guys ready to read some reviews?
I have a few. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, this one says 4.5 stars, wanted more killing.
Person needs help. All right.
This one, also 4 stars, references a part of the book. This will just give you a taste of what you are in for. 4 stars. All I can say is, in the eye hole, he put it in the eye hole where she just gouged an eye out. In all honesty, this book was super fun to read. I would not recommend for the squeamish. The time jumps were a little confusing, but I eventually understood.
Yeah.
And then I have one more, but it's a 3-star, and it says, I'd have given it 4 if I didn't gag at a few points. It's a cute storyline in a weird, twisted way, but I can't do gore.
I feel so, that hardcore.
Yeah.
-1 star for gag reflex.
Right. I feel like Catherine's our resident, like, anti-gore queen.
Yeah. I specifically in, like, movies, don't love the gore, and TV shows, because right, they're more visual. I can get through it a little bit more in books. And I think this was just enough to where I wasn't full on gag reflex the entire time.
Yeah.
That's I never gagged. Don't bother me.
Yeah. I think I gagged once, but I think that's one of my compliments for the author, is I think she did a great job walking the line.
Yeah.
I did like cover my mouth at one point. Like,
oh, jaw drops.
Yeah.
Jaw drops for so
maybe
many
2 or 3
things.
Points, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just for gore, for so many of the things.
There was one part I gagged and had to set it down for a second. And then there was others where it's just jaw drop.
Yeah.
It's like if Criminal Minds or Bones was a rom-com.
Exactly.
Bones kind of is.
Or that's actually a great transition into one of my reviews. So I have 2 1-stars and a 5-star. Lots of very funny one-liners for all rating levels in this book.
Absolutely.
Anyway, but since we're talking about, you know, this is like Bones, etc. A one-star review. It's like Dexter, but hornier. But hornier.
That was going to be mine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, my other one star is I have a lot of questions and a lot of concerns. I thought, yes. Mm-hmm. And then the 5-star is just, goddamn. Yeah. You were all right about this one.
Oh, my God. I love that we both saw the Dexter one. And it's just like, yes.
Yep.
Dexter, yep. But hornier. Okay. Right. I scrolled down a bit and I found another 1-star. And this is not a spoiler, but it is kind of funny because this does happen in the book and I don't think it ruins anything. 1-star. The male MC fucked the protagonist well in a dragon onesie. I'm putting that out there.
Another trigger warning. This book is spicy.
Very spicy.
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 Like, yeah. All ranges of sex.
So I actually listened to this book mostly in audiobook format.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Dude, I was in my car, like, actually screaming because it is so raunchy.
Put it this way, they're serial killers. They like it a little bit aggressive.
They're intense, rough, boundaryless people.
Exactly. It applies in all areas of their life and all areas of the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And their bodies. Okay. So the overall Goodreads rating, 4.1 out of 5. The overall Amazon rating is 4.3 out of 5. So pretty highly rated for a love story about two serial killers. What did y'all think?
It's actually a cute story, despite the trigger warning, which definitely made me not want to pick it up. But I actually really enjoyed this book. So I'm giving it 4 stars, and it's a solid 4 stars. I mean, I agree with one of your guys' reviews where the time jumps did get a little confusing at times because they don't really tell you how much time had gone on. So you're just kind of like, wait, we just left off there 7 months ago. What's going on? But then once I got into the pacing of it, it was a really quick read. And I mean, I do have to knock a little bit for one scene because that was it almost bordered on too much. But it probably would have been a 5-star if those two things had been addressed. One was toned down and then the other was more clear in the timeline. But otherwise, it's a really great book.
I feel like the scene you probably hated was probably my favorite scene.
I didn't need the descriptions. Yeah. I think I would have been fine up until a certain point and then we just went too far.
Well, on that note, I'm also a 4. This was pretty, like, I was debating a 5-star, but some of it is just so gross and some of it is just so kinky. Some of the parts were just a lot, so probably more realistically like a 4-star for me. This is the funniest shit I have read in ages. Yeah. It is, yeah. I was laughing my ass off. I did text them. I was like, well, the first page is heinous. And they're like, oh, no. And I was like, no, Lincoln, disgusting, heinous. So you just jump right in. But that didn't scare me. And I really do feel like one of my favorite scenes is probably Catherine's least favorite. So I can't wait to talk about that.
Least favorite. I think it's just gotten too far.
Far enough.
Well, I am so excited because this was a 5-star book for me.
Wow.
And it's a rom-com.
I think this is my first ever genuine rom-com that I have given 5 stars. Yes. I think every single one. So I gave Book Lovers 4 stars, and I think that's my next highest. All the others have been 3 or 3.5s. So
from the woman who brought you Tenders of Flesh and Bunny, we have a 5-star rom-com and it's about serial killers. And there's cannibalism involved.
Yeah.
Kinky serial killers.
Right. Perhaps not as surprising as I would have wanted it to be. But no, I felt like it broke so many molds. The fact that they're serial killers makes some of the annoying things that I don't like about like normie people rom-coms make sense. Like, the kind of like insta-love obsession, like obsession over time stuff just made sense because of like who they are and their kind of like obsessive, intense personalities. And it still managed to be like really fucking cute. Also,
I never thought Murder was so cute.
I know.
Yeah, no, they're really cute.
And it did really make me laugh. Like, this is one of the only rom-coms I've read where I wasn't cringing at the jokes. Like, I was actually laughing. And the characters are both actually, like, really complicated. Like, I mean, they're serial killers, so obviously you get into why they're fucking murderers. And so I really felt like it. I think it's really challenging to take such a dark concept and make it palatable. And I think she did the perfect job of, like, not apologizing for the characters, but also kind of allowing them to like be happy and believable and have depth. So I was really impressed. I like fucking loved it.
Yeah.
If you like a meet cute over a dead corpse, then book's for you.
This book kind of reminds me of like TV shows like Veronica Mars and New Girl, where it's like that fast paced like banter back and forth. Yeah. And like, Gilmore Girls does it really well, though, where they just keep bantering. And so it just gets funnier and funnier as they banter. And I think that's what's so great about it. It's not the kitschy one-liners that normally happen in rom-coms or the like accidental meet cutes or kind of your typical tropes. It's more of just like a friendship developing from these two atypical people who have some serious issues, but they're fucking hilarious. And they just quip off of each other.
And the MMC is a broody Irishman.
Oh, love them Irishmen.
So great. I will say here, okay, so the audiobook I have a mixed relationship with.
Accents, especially, I hate them.
Yeah, because the sexy scenes are like off the fucking chain. When someone's actually like speaking it to you, it was crazy. The man's voice is like insanely sexy. Because he has this deep Irish voice and his voice, like, I mean, it could have bumped the book up a whole star. It was so hot. The girl's voice is like fucking obnoxious as hell. So no. you get both. But a lot of the sexy scenes are from his perspective. And so it was like, oof.
Ooh.
Well, do we think this was more plot or character driven?
It's hard because like the ending is a lot of plot, but up until the ending, it's pretty character driven. It's all about these two kind of overcoming themselves and overcoming their own personal journeys and traumas and past lives in order to come together as two individuals. So I think I would technically argue it's character driven up until like a point at the ending when it stops becoming character driven.
See, I think it's mostly plot driven, as most rom-coms seem to be, because I think the main structure of the book is the game they end up playing. And then the banter falls within the realm of the game, you know?
I agree with that. I feel like there is a lot of character development, but I still think that like a lot of what happens is sort of like set up to just kind of follow the plot, like follow the game. And then obviously the kind of feelings and stuff develop from there.
Fair enough. I can make that case too. It's like one of those, the game felt so subplotty to me at times.
Yeah.
It's because it had a healthy balance. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, Caitlin, your time to shine. Have you / would you read other books by the author?
So, I finished book 2, Leather and Lark, before this episode recording, like finished it today. It is another love story based on two of the characters from this book. Guys, I think I hated it.
That's sad.
I freaking loved Butcher and Blackbird, so I immediately put Leather and Lark on hold. And these are not spoilers. It like switched it messed with the personalities they established for these characters in the first book. And also, the main plot point is a marriage of convenience. And I was like, excuse me, these two characters who you described this one way in the first book, A Marriage of Convenience? No, thank you. Also, I just hate that in general. And that one I would say was definitely 100% more character driven. Like there is a plot they're trying to solve, but like it's all about working through one character's trauma. Anyway, book three comes out next year soon. Will I partake? I don't know. It was a hard switch from Butcher and Blackbird to this one. It was just also not nearly as funny. But actually, I did gag in the second one.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, did that's gag. Not great.
Also, that auto-cannibalism warning.
Yeah, oof. Yeah, I loved this book, so I'm curious about her other books. But I also get
I wouldn't say don't. I would just say my bar was high.
Yes, you guys know I'm scarred from Serpent and the Wings of Night.
Yes,
and sometimes I know if I'm not going to love the duology or like the next books now, I just kind of don't because this book is sacred to me and I don't want to ruin it.
I think I'm just more of a brutal banter girly than a like gushy feely girly. So very different.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like Marriage Convenience either, like least favorite trope.
I mean, I still like the story, and oh my god, if you thought the spice was kinky in the first book, no, you didn't.
Oh my god.
I mean, the first book was a lot.
Yeah. The first
I normally can read smut in like public places and be perfectly fine. This book, no. I had to be fully at home by myself to read this because I was blushing like a schoolgirl.
Yeah, no. It was like, okay, I'm done. Read it yourself. I don't know. See if you like it. Maybe my opinion is strange. I don't know. But
yeah. Okay. Well, what about the pacing of the book? How long did it take you guys to read?
Freaking blew through it.
Same.
I wish I had savored it.
I read it in a day.
Yeah. So I was on a work trip when I read this. So I was driving, which is why I was listening to the audiobook predominantly. Yes, I had to like sit for 10 minutes every time I got out of the car because I was like, I need to unwind from what I just heard. So via audiobook, I think it took me 2 days to read, but like I was obsessed with it. If I had had time outside of the car to read it, I would have read it in a day.
I'm so tempted now to use an Audible credit on this just to listen to Rowan.
Use it. I'm telling you.
Okay.
Or just do it for book two because another Irish dude.
Yeah, that's right. True.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I read it in like 2 days and I wish I had just sat down and read it all at once. I think I stayed up late too one day finishing it because I was like, I'm not stopping. And it takes a lot for me to want to go past bedtime. So
yeah,
she's the old lady of the group.
Thank you. Perfection. No comments.
I think the games provide helpful structure that keep the pace always moving.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Would you watch a movie or TV show?
No.
No. I don't want to see it. Oh, my God.
No. Caitlin. Oh, my God. Okay. I don't think this is really a spoiler. The removing of the eyeballs.
Yeah, no.
Fine.
Come on.
I'm in.
You're in? No, I don't want to.
Now, you couldn't put some of the spice on that screen, but
yeah, this would be a full-on porno if you put the spice on.
What I wrote in my review is someone call Ryan Murphy because this is Scream Queens. It is Scream Queens. The comedic gore and just like ridiculousness of what they're up to. It is Scream Queens. So I was like, call Ryan Murphy. I need to see this. I would laugh my ass off. Like I said, though, gore does not bother me one bit.
I said, not if it's on a screen. I can't see it on a screen. So I'm out on that.
Don't bother me.
You know who I would really want to be the male main character is Colin Farrell.
I could see
young
it.
Colin Farrell.
He's like, a little old, but yes,
young
I can
Colin
see it.
Farrell. Yes,
I love him.
I could see like Anna Kendrick.
Yes.
Freaking funny.
She would be funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sort of like die. Nerd girl. Also,
I'll sell this. I will pitch this to someone. Sign me up.
Right. Okay. Well, Netflix, if you're listening, we would love to hear your thoughts. Caitlin would be a great producer.
I watched every episode of Scream Queens. I love this shit. Scream Queens was nasty, guys.
Yeah, it was. Well, I also love Scream Queens, actually. I watched the whole thing as well. Okay. Well, I think that brings us to our Busy Girl ratings.
Five.
Yeah, it's a five. I wanted
if you're reading it, you've already crossed the hardest line.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, I was kind of tempted just to give it a four because of like so many trigger warnings. But if you were already here for the smutty romance serial killer and you knew about the cannibalism going in, you're fine. You're going to be okay.
Right. Cannibalism's not even the worst part.
No, it's not.
TV show preference is a good measure. Like, do you like Criminal Minds? Do you like Dexter? Do you like Bones? If you like those shows, you'll be fine.
If the stuff you see on Bones doesn't make you squeamish, you're probably fine.
Yeah.
Because there were some nasty murder scenes on that
one. If you listen to true crime podcasts, you're fine.
If you like a slasher flick, you're good.
Right.
If chainsaws don't bother you, you're fine.
This meme writes itself.
Yeah. If you watched Hannibal on TV, you're also fine.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Guys, I'm really not this dark and twisted. I watch a lot of twisted stuff.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, I am so excited to get into like every detail of this book. So I think that brings us to the spoiler section. We obviously, you know, have pretty good reviews of this book. So please go read it. If you are squeamish, this discussion will probably still make you squeamish, but you're welcome to stick around just to see what the hype is about.
All right. Let's talk to our anti-rom-commer for question one. What made this the rom-com that finally got your five-star rating?
I really think this rom-com is just like totally unique, and it was just really, really unexpected. Like, I think you hear rom-com between serial killers and you still assume the book is going to be really dark. This book managed to be really lighthearted and funny, but not in a way that just felt like forced and fake. It still had, like, I mentioned this in the beginning, there are some of the common, like, rom-com tropes, but it just made more sense when the characters were serial killers. Like, all their, like, personal life problems, their attachment issues, their kind of, like, long-term obsession with each other, like, all of those things made sense because they're serial killers. So, like, some of the stuff that really, like, pisses me off in regular rom-coms makes sense, like, even some of the stuff about like social anxiety, like
impulsiveness,
just like the intensity and fixation on each other that for other people, I would have said like, no, this is like weird and unhealthy. I was like, well, they're serial killers. So this is how their brains work. I also mentioned this before, but I think the author did a really, really good job of walking the line between like gory and funny, like the line between like morality, and like really managed to like write this like really sweet romance. I also really liked both characters. I feel like in most rom-coms I have like a strong preference for one or the other, but and I do feel compelled to mention, while some of the sex scenes were incredibly raunchy, the scene at the beginning where he like chokes her after beating the shit out of that guy, like, lives permanently rent free in my brain. Like, I will probably think about it forever. It was so sexy. So, yeah, I was hooked.
Yeah.
Also, I love that he falls first.
Like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
He falls first hard. He like spends all his time trying to convince this woman to love him, which in a regular rom-com, I would not like. Makes sense because he's a serial killer.
Yeah, and it makes sense because he's
this is his prey.
Yeah.
Right.
He's a more
socially stable serial killer, mm-hmm. if that even makes sense. Like, he's right. just definitely, he knows what he wants and he goes for it, while she's a lot more reserved and a lot more calculated and needs time to plan things out. He's a serial killer that, like, cuts and goes. She's mm-hmm. one that thinks out a plan and presents an art piece at the end of her killings. So, like, she's very meticulous and methodical, while he's, like, balls to the walls, gunslinging, ready to go into a relationship. But he also, because he's very in tune to her, because they're from very similar kind of situations, he's able to see that she needs time and distance. So he's like, even in his point of views, he's like, okay, I can't scare her off. She's like a baby deer. I could scare her off. Let me make sure that I'm, like, taking this at her pace and mm-hmm. work this way through. And I thought that was very sweet.
Well, and also, they both have people in their lives who know their secret and love them and support them anyway, which is important to, like, they're not just loner psychopaths. Like, these are people living a double life. So it's interesting mm-hmm. because you see there are stakes. There are people that care for them, and you get to know those characters too. And I think it just adds, like, a whole nother dimension.
I also think just the fact that they're serial killers adds a lot of, like, will they, won't they tension. Like, not only, like, will they, won't they, like, hook up, or will they, won't they fall in love, will they, won't they be together, but also, like, will they, won't they kill each other? Like,
yep.
And they actually trust each other. At what
I was point- waiting for the twist where one of them thought about it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And they both think about, like, they could kill me, but neither of them ever think about I could kill them.
Yeah. It's right. more of like, can I trust this person unless I'm yeah. going to kill you?
Right. And it adds a whole layer of, like, not only are you just at a basic survival level trusting this person not to kill you, you're also trusting them to, like, keep all of your secrets. Like, you could get each other thrown in fucking jail, you know? Like, and I love the intensity. Like, it's dark, but the game they play, where, like, once a year they, like, hunt together, also has this, like, really kind of sweet tension to it. Cause it's like, even though they're killing someone, it's like lighthearted competition. So you get all that, like, competition banter and, like, smack talk, and, you know, they're, like, flirting with each other. It was just, like, a great setup to, like, keep the romance kind of moving. So yeah, I thought it was also really well timed. My one critique is that the ending stretched on a little long.
Yeah.
And when Rowan gets, like, kidnapped, I was like, okay, it's time for the book to be over. Like, can we just get the happy ending now? We didn't need this whole last thing.
I also thought it was gratuitous until she, like, showed her cards. I'm like, okay, queen, pop off. mm-hmm.
It was bad.
Now, the epilogue, I was like, we didn't need this shit.
Right. It was yeah. just like a little, it was a little too like, nah, nah, now we all hold hands and laugh. Like, well, we didn't need that.
I think.
And they lived happily ever after, literally.
It's yeah. trying to complete this chapter so that she can continue on into the next couple is what I'm kind of gathering. And also,
yeah.
I can tell that this author is a romance writer at the core of her. So she falls into the romance writer trap of having to complete a story and having to complete an ending and not leave anything to any gray area. Like, these two live happily well, ever after.
The first rule of romance is it's not classified as romance unless there is a happily ever after.
Yeah.
So you know what you're getting.
Right. Which I do think that, like, at that point in the story, we kind of trust the characters, you know, like, they're developed enough. We get both of their perspectives, which also both of their perspectives in this book were worth it.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
The perfect book to be dual perspective.
I think it was necessary, too.
Yes. Because absolutely. If you didn't get both of their perspectives the whole time, you would also be like, are they going to fucking kill each other? Like, you need to know both of their perspectives to even, like, believe the romance.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It would be a lot less lighthearted, and it would be a lot higher of stakes if they uh-huh. didn't have Rowan's perspective and it was just Sloane, because she was so paranoid and she was so socially anxious about everything. It would have just been, like, you would be in a state of high anxiety, will they, won't they? And I don't think that would have benefited the reader at all, because you're already having to grapple with, like, very dark themes while also this very lighthearted banter. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't know Rowan's intentions, like, as the reader, you would think that he's fucking with her and toying with her, mm-hmm. especially yeah. with how lighthearted it is.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, yep. Well, we've been kind of all over the place, but
well, we were already talking about it, so let's talk about our two leads. So Sloane's murder nickname is the Orb Weaver because she freaking pops the eyeballs, the orbs out of people,
and she plucks.
Spins this elaborate web. Plucks, I'm sorry, no gouging. She hangs the eyeballs as part of an intricate web that is really a map that the FBI can never figure out. So she's trying to solve all this stuff for them, and they just never get it. And then Rowan is the Boston butcher. He just whacks people, which is funny because he's actually a chef in real life. So he's got his butcher knife and goes out after, like, the pedophiles of the world. So, and they both have little tragic backstories. They both accidentally became murderers, sort of, when they were young and just decided to keep dispensing justice. Well, what do we think? Are they the perfect match? Is that the perfect backstory? Does that make murder acceptable and love possible?
Well, I mean, both their situations were in self-defense when it started out. Like, Rowan's dad was abusive, and him and his brothers kind of fought back from the abuse after a while. And then Sloane basically took out a pedophile teacher at her boarding school. So
who had preyed on her and her only...
Yes, her and Lark were both preyed upon by this pedophile teacher, and that's what caused her to have really severe trust issues with men in particular. And that's why she also goes into a life of serial killing, killing serial killers, because, you know, she needs to scratch that itch now that she's got it. And mm-hmm. So I think, yes, they were obviously perfectly made for each other. It's a rom-com. You got to have that perfect match. But I think it gives them a lot more depth than just, she could have just gone serial killers killing serial killers and just called it that and done no backstory. And most rom-com readers would have been okay with that. But I think when you give a level of depth and reasoning why, it brings in more like moral quandaries and like social justice and like vigilantism. Is it ever justified? Because they do kill some pretty shitty people in this book. But then you're still thinking in the back of your head, like, is this the right way to go about this? Like, should you be taking on your own vigilante justice? Debatable.
Oh, yeah. Morally black. But not shiny black. Right. I don't know.
Shiny black.
It's a very dark
sparkly
gray.
Black. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're a great pair because the people in their lives who know their secrets accept them. But they don't understand them. So they're the only two people who can truly understand each other and why they do what they do and why they get a little hit of joy from it, which is interesting because they do. They do both derive joy from it. And it is fascinating to hear them be like, well, this time when I did this, and they're like, oh, no, you did that? No way. Like,
almost, it's like an aphrodisiac for them, which is just weird to say.
Yeah, it is. Which I think that's part of the intrigue is it's like, it is so wrong, but it feels so right. Because the whole time, you know, they're doing something bad. Like, murder is never correct. But obviously the fact that they're killing bad people gives them like a little bit of moral cover because it's like, well, you know, they're killing people who would hurt a lot of other people.
The author didn't make you love the characters so deeply, you probably would have been more like, this is weird. But you fall in love with these two characters. So you're like, yeah, get them.
The one scene that really rocked me, actually, was the scene I was talking about earlier where Rowan beats the shit out of that guy. And it talks about he's like just a pulp at the end. And I was like, oh, God.
That was the darkest. Yet somehow, like, you saw him at his basest. Self, and she didn't leave, and that's when you knew,
right? You knew.
But yeah, like, you, that's when you're also like, he could kill her, he could,
yeah,
he doesn't, but
no, spoiler alert.
So that's the first stop of their game. Let's talk about the game, which will eventually get us to accidental cannibalism.
Oh, my God. That seemed so gross.
What do you think about the game?
Love the game.
Yes.
So funny.
So funny.
Perfect.
Which was your favorite kill?
The one Catherine hates.
I mean, I kind of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre because I thought that was super funny and just like going full in on the horror spoof.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was in Texas as well just makes it even funnier.
Right.
The comedy of the dinner scene. I cannot.
I know, but I really liked I really liked her playing his dead mom. And
oh, yeah.
Showing that her corpse over her. Okay,
that was freaking nasty.
Yeah, that was not as nasty to me as the sperm semen ice cream. That's where I drew a line that I couldn't. Like, I legitimately started gagging.
And hilarious that they kept bringing it up like an inside joke.
I know, so like, this is not an inside joke, y'all. Stop.
So it comes up. They make the joke in the second book, too.
Oh, God. No. Actually, we're on Mizzou Girls.
Oh, yes. Does it
remind you of anything?
Yes, it does. Oh, my God. Which frat was it? Or do we not want to say which frat it was?
I don't remember which frat it was. At Mizzou.
I do.
Oh, my God. Caitlin does.
I do.
At Mizzou, there was a rumor that at one of the frats at Mizzou, the elder classmen made the new recruits eat ice cream that had the older kids' semen in it. Like, they had jacked off into it.
This is pledge hazing. They got shut down by their national chapter, and it was the OG chapter of that fraternity, and it got shut down.
I now remember the name of the frat. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, actually reading that scene was a little triggering because I was like, we've been here before. What is it with people and ice cream and semen? Why is this a thing?
It was just the fact that it was the lobotomized guy. Mm-hmm. He just added this extra layer of hilarity to it. He just,
but then you find out that he wasn't actually lobotomized.
I suspected he wasn't, but
well, yeah, but like at the same time. So then he just on his own volition did that? That's fucked.
Yeah, later on it is. But in the moment, it's funny, in my opinion. It's disgusting. Disgusting. Yeah. But very funny. Their banter while she's like, so you, that stuff you ate.
Was human ass. Yes. That part I was okay with. It's just when it got to the ice cream, I was like, oh God, oh God.
The jokes about like you're an ass man, all that. So good. So funny.
That part was
I didn't
funny.
Know it could be funny. It was hilarious.
That part was funny. 100% agree.
Now her stringing it up in the dining room later, no, I had no interest, but
yeah. Actually, I thought some of her orb weaving art pieces were like one of the more fucked up parts.
Oh,
I
was for sure. Kind of like, absolutely.
Ew.
She's like, and I got a strip of him to hang here. And I was like, excuse me?
It was a little much, yes.
There was a lot of cutting strips off people.
Yes.
And gouging out eyeballs. Sorry, plucking out eyeballs.
Scooping.
Yeah. Getting those eyeballs out.
My questions that I have are not about the book. They're about the author and if she's in therapy.
I do have questions about the author. Yeah. Because she wrote this very well. Also, something I enjoyed is that, like, I do feel like as a society, like, research into psychopaths is, like, relatively new.
That's true.
And so I think we're, like, just kind of learning how to understand people who, like, don't really experience empathy in the same way that, like, most people do. And I've always felt like it's probably not true that people who are psychopaths can't fall in love. I feel like that was kind of the old logic of it. And I think that like new research is kind of revealing that that's not like totally accurate. It's just that like morality and human emotion is just like revolves around a different like entry point. And so I really liked kind of posing the question.
And I'm not even sure you would describe these two as by the book psychopaths anyway.
Right.
Like they're vengeance seekers. They're vigilante justice seekers.
They're definitely
but they do
sociopaths.
Have this emotional detachment because of their past trauma.
Yes. But it creates this like spectrum of like it's not as simple as like we normally think about it, that like people who do this are like inherently one way.
Right. They weren't killing animals and lighting fires when they were kids.
Well,
they came about it a different way.
And Sloane also mentions at the beginning of the book to Lark, like that she worries that she'll one day get out of hand and where like the urge to kill will just like grow and grow and grow to where it's insatiable. And that's when she'll start killing random people. And she actively worries about that, which tells you that she's not like a sociopath because she's worrying about her actions of others. And that's when like kind of she jokes with Lark of like, take me out then, like it's time, like whatever. And so I think it's interesting that she poses kind of those things of like, I do this because of what's happened to me, but I have my limits, I have my boundaries, and I actively worry if I ever cross one of those boundaries.
Yeah. Very interesting. So much to talk about. I just love the game. It was the perfect pacing for the book, it wasn't insta-love because the time jumps, which are kind of confusing, are usually about a year apart. Right. With a couple in betweens, they decided they needed to see each other before their annual hunt. But
yeah, it was like in between the first and second game and then the second and third game where you didn't quite know what the time period was because there was like chapters in between the games and they were like, oh, it's been a while since I've talked to him. And then you find out later in the chapter, it's like 8 months or 6 months. And you're just kind of like, we just ended with y'all two talking. So this is quite the jerk and in the different direction. But, you get used to it.
But I appreciated that it wasn't like, okay, we're in love and now we're killing people together. It was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Years of building up trust. Yeah. Also, the cooking move, the delivering food so that he could cook on the phone with her.
Stalker. Awesome. Loved it.
Yeah. Stalker. They both stalked. It's fine.
So cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When she shows up in his restaurant and he finds her. Yeah. And she like slowly turns around when he's like Blackbird. I'm like,
oh, yes.
Yeah. So good.
And he practically begs her to stay. I was like, woo.
The tension.
Okay. And so then good. He flies out to North Carolina to make sure that she's cooking with him. Just standing across the street. Her.
It's creepy as shit, but in a hot way.
But love it.
Yeah.
This is why I want to know how the author, what's in her head, how she made us enjoy this, because we should not enjoy that and she shouldn't be writing it. But
yeah, that's so many red flags.
Also,
yeah, it's so many red flags, but Rowan House somehow turns them green.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Discuss this a little bit, but what did you guys think of Daniel and the two games and their consequences, etc.?
I at first didn't think much of Daniel just because like I thought it was like a kitschy kind of thing where it's just like the lobotomized guy, like she was being nice. But then when like after a few more accidents or coincidences happened at his restaurant and the only new element was Daniel, I was thinking like, yeah, this is too many coincidences to just not be Daniel. I did like that he was actually kind of a mastermind serial killer and he put it together faster than like the FBI or any like other agency and was like, you're hunting us. Yeah, you're hunting us. So it's better, safer in numbers. And then he was like, well, I'm just going to play an idiot and watch this guy overthink himself and get himself killed. And then I can live to another day. So it was very smart. And I think that's like a very interesting way to continue the plot line of the game, even after the game had kind of concluded with them in a relationship. Like it presented like a speed bump in their relationship, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it like ripped your heart out when he was trying to tell her to go away because he loved her too much to like let her get in the middle of all that. Even though the guy would have gone and killed her anyway. But because they think the same in there, it's three serial killers facing off. She's like, no, I know there's more to this game. And she figures it out, which is amazing. It took her a while and he lost bits of his skin and watched Daniel eat it in front of him.
Yeah, that was gross.
Oh, this is God. Where we went a little far. That was.
Yeah.
The, like, that was a lot.
Sucking it, where it describes him like sucking the piece of skin into his mouth. And I was like, oh.
When it's like. There is one thing I learned from whatever his face, and it's like got taste for. I was like, ugh, okay, but that was one. That one was too far. Not funny. Not in a comedic way. It was just disgusting.
No, there was no comedy to that.
Yeah. But Sloane is a badass and shows that she's smart and knows what's up. And I actually thought it was really interesting. Did I totally expect that little, like, I don't know, ending? Not really, but I was pleasantly surprised, even though it did feel like it was kind of over and then it wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't mind. I was fine.
No.
What I did mind is when she plucked the ring box out of a dead person's eye.
That was a little much.
Mind.
But it was kind of perfect because they kept talking about I pluck, not gouge. So it kind of just made sense for them, mm-hmm. but still gross.
It was getting, this is when we start getting a little too cute. I'm like, mm-hmm. okay. Serial killers can propose in a normal way. I agree. Interesting to say the least. I did expect Daniel to come up again because I was like, there's just no way that he goes to work at his restaurant and like he's there and then just like never comes up. Yeah. I did not, however, expect him to be his own serial killer. So that did catch me.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. I thought he was a malicious actor, but I didn't realize he was like a mastermind serial killer.
Didn't realize other serial killers were teaming up.
Yes.
Right.
Didn't think about that.
Here's a follow-up too to the, so there's like the epilogue where they get married, and then there's like this epilogue, and it's like the phantom, I think, mm-hmm. and it's this guy who's like, they killed my brother, now I'm gonna take what's dear to them, and he's like watching Lachlan, Rowan's brother. What'd you think of that little tidbit just thrown in there after the happy ending?
I didn't think it was totally necessary. It didn't add anything to the book for me. It was obviously, I feel like it was added post-editing process because she knew she wanted to make this a series, or her and her publisher made that decision. Because this could have been a standalone book, but I understand mm-hmm. wanting to milk a series for what it's worth. And there's a cast of characters that you can explore. So I felt it felt a little disconnected from the rest of the book. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't necessary for me.
It was like the scene they hide after the credits of a movie. Like, not necessary, but like interesting.
So I thought, I was kind of like, fuck, there's more. Like, I love this book, but I was like, baby girl, we got to wrap it up. Like,
yeah,
you need to end the story.
If it had ended with the proposal and stuff, I would be fine.
Yeah, we didn't need the wedding. Not really.
They had their happily ever after. I'm glad you affirmed it, but.
Right. I also did think it was sort of an interesting conflict that eventually he stops wanting her to like kill by herself. Not because killing is bad, but because it's dangerous. And he was like, I'm worried that you're going to get hurt.
To be fair, she did get hurt.
Very badly hurt, yes. And would have been quite fucked without him.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
That was also, we could go to Fionn, though.
Yeah. And also, oh my gosh, the side characters of his brother and his brother's, you know, female
circus
friend.
Performer.
Yeah.
Rose, yeah.
Tarot card reader.
Love Rose.
Let me just tell you, everyone is back for book two.
Of course.
So I talked about how maybe not my favorite follow-up, but do you guys like Larkin Lachlan enough? That was a lot of L's. To read book two. Do you like Fionn enough to read book three?
I actually kind of want to skip book two and read book three because I'm more interested in Fionn, especially after hearing your review, Caitlin. My mom also read Leather and Lark and had similar things to say. She liked it more than you, but she agreed that it was not as good as this one. But I love Rose. I like Rose more than I like Lark. So
it's funny because I didn't love Lachlan, but I liked Lark and I loved Rose, and I didn't love the other brothers. Like, the two women I'm more interested in than anything else. So I was considering reading book two. Now I'm less sure because, Caitlin, I trust your gut on this. Because
I kind of want one of you to read it, though, just to tell me if I'm right or wrong.
I mean, I probably will end up reading it. Let's be honest.
I mean, I blew through that one, too. Like,
yeah,
I never had a reason to put it down, but I was just kind of like, the tropes. And
yeah, I don't love Marriage of Convenience. That already like turns me off.
it really does have much deeper character development specifically for Lark.
Okay. I would be interested in that. She was kind of two-dimensional throughout the book, but I liked her as a character. So maybe I'll read the second book. But yeah, I liked the women more than I liked the men. The men were hot, sexy Irish men, but the women were more powerful and deep.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. Do you guys have book recommendations?
I can't think of a single book.
I'm at a loss.
I have one for you.
Ooh.
Not our favorite book, but Final Girl Support Group.
Oh God.
It's a satire about slasher flicks, which I believe this is similarly like that.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, there's also My Sister, the Serial Killer.
Yeah.
Sort of comedic.
I guess if you want to go down the rom-com trail, Bride, pretty close to this one in the sense that it's a raunchy rom-com.
In the sense that there's some kinky shit in there?
Yeah.
That's all. Everybody's got an itch that needs scratched. I can't see it. Either of those were mine, but...
Which is fair.
I'm trying to think. So I'm going to recommend a TV show. I'm going to go for Killing Eve.
Ooh, love that show.
I love Killing Eve. It's one of my favorite shows. And it is about this sort of love story, sort of just like tension, thrill of the chase between a serial killer and an M16 agent in Britain. And it is really, really fascinating. Also kind of tackles the question of like, how much do like psychopaths or sociopaths feel? How much are they capable of like relating to other people and falling in love and valuing others? And it's just really good.
Google says it's actually based off a book.
Oh, okay. Well, then I haven't read the book, but read the book.
Yeah, I want to read the book.
Codename Villanelle.
Yep.
That's the name of the book.
Because that's the name of the serial killer in it. Mm-hmm. It also has the woman from Grey's Anatomy in it.
Grey's Anatomy sucks as soon as she left.
Yeah.
Sandra Oh. She's so good in it. I love her. Highly recommend.
Okay. Well, these are our opinions, but in this case, they're right. This is the perfect book to wrap up spooky season. We like a dark, twisted romance anyway. This is the darkest twisted romance, but it's so funny and also heartwarming. So let us know if you disagree. If you've read this and you're like, no, guys, this was just bad and you are all sick, reach out to us. Mm-hmm. Give us therapy recommendations. I don't know. You can find us at Busy Girls Pod on all of our social media. And you can email us busygirlspod@gmail.com and drop us bookrecs@busygirlspod.com. We have done several book recs, so please send them our way. And don't forget to rate and review us. We're getting a lot more reviews, so that's fun. Thank you guys. You're listening and letting us know you like it. So we appreciate you, but like, keep it up. Tell your friends. And with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.